So I'm going to talk today about, as Junon said, our project, Eye Care Quality and Accessibility Improvement in the Community, also known as Equality. And of course, I'd like to recognize the funding from the CDC. For many in the room, I won't belabor this point. There are a number of barriers in the field of glaucoma care, one of which is barriers to screening glaucoma. As many of you are aware, the performance of various screening methods are not as optimal as we'd like them to be. We also know that there are clinician barriers to following up with glaucoma patients and suspects. There have been numerous publications evaluating the following the preferred practice patterns and characteristics for providers that do and do not follow those patterns, and again, demonstrating suboptimal levels on those metrics. And then finally, there are also patient barriers to follow-up and compliance with management plans, and there have been a number of studies that have looked at knowledge, awareness, and access to care deficits in that population. So when you combine all of these barriers together, what you start to identify is, again, a number of different avenues in which we can potentially improve glaucoma care. And so really the focus of this demonstration project at the University of Alabama at Birmingham is focusing on the development and implementation of a community-based, cost-efficient glaucoma detection method and longitudinal care delivery model, focusing on an at-risk group, that is African Americans 40 and older. In this project, we're using highly efficient automated algorithms to help, again, improve the process of care for patients with glaucoma, particularly in our case in rural areas. Our project setting is Walmart. Fortunately, we have had some connections with Walmart vision centers, and so this demonstration project is actually taking place in two separate vision centers, one located in Birmingham, Alabama, which is the Red Star, and the other located in Tuscaloosa, Alabama, which is the Blue Star. Both of these vision centers have a large number of patient visits per year, 4,000 and 7,000 per year, and about 50% of their patients are African American. So this really represents an opportunity to integrate high-quality glaucoma care into a setting where it might not always be available. One of the important parts of this project is, in fact, education. As I mentioned, there are a number of different barriers on the provider side, on the patient side. So one of the important aspects for us was to provide education. And one of the first pieces of education was training for the Vision Center optical staff. They went through a training program that focused on knowledge of glaucoma, how it's treated, persons at risk, how to discuss glaucoma with patients, and how do patients overcome barriers to care. And all of this training was done prior to this project being implemented so that the providers who were interacting with patients would have all of this information at their disposal and it could be integrated into the routine process of care. However, we also implemented videos, which patients would be shown, which I'll mention in a moment, that talks about glaucoma. It talks about the importance of a routine dilated eye exam. It talks about the risk factors for glaucoma, who is at risk, and the importance of receiving routine care. And then finally, again, Walmart has been a very good partner in this. They allowed us to create package inserts, which described, again, the same messages, who's at risk for glaucoma. And these were placed in customer purchases, again, so that information could be disseminated. And finally, throughout the Vision Center, there are posters educating individuals about glaucoma, what it is, and the importance of routine eye care. The testing protocol. Basically, all patients who visited Walmart Vision Centers were registered as part of their routine care and screened for inclusion criteria. So the inclusion criteria for this particular project were African Americans or Hispanics, 40 years of age or older, Caucasians, 50 years of age or older, persons of any age or race with diabetes, persons of any age or race with glaucoma-associated diagnosis, or persons with a family history of glaucoma. So this was the target population that we were attempting to identify for this project. All patients who were registered and again met the inclusion criteria had a comprehensive eye exam. And this included, among other things, 24-2 visual fields, fundus photos, CIRRUS OCT. For individuals who had a normal OCT, spectralis scans were done. And Chris Gerken put that particular line in there. I don't know what spectralis scans are or to be used for, but apparently they're very, very important. Nonetheless, if you were normal, you had a normal an annual eye exam, which was then scheduled. But for individuals who had an abnormal OCT, all of the information from that exam was uploaded and sent to UAB electronically. Then a glaucoma specialist on the glaucoma service developed independently a glaucoma diagnosis and management plan, which they then compared to the management plan and diagnosis that the optometrist uploaded. In any instances where there was a disagreement, the optometrist and the ophthalmologist had a discussion to adjudicate what the best approach would be. And if surgical intervention was needed, the patient was referred to UAB for further evaluation. At the present time, and again, just to pause for a moment, what I'm presenting here is just our interim results to give you a snapshot as to where we are presently with this particular project. So to date, or at least at the time that we closed the data set for this presentation, there were 352 individual patients that had been included, an average age of 55, again, reflecting the inclusion criteria. They were predominantly female, 63%, and again, the majority being black, non-Hispanic, reflecting the inclusion criteria. And the education distribution is, as you can see it on there. Some of the clinical characteristics, again, reflecting the information that we, the inclusion criteria, about a third of the patients had a prior glaucoma diagnosis, and of those, 41% were taking some kind of IOP lowering medication. In terms of the prevalence of chronic medical conditions and eye diseases, about 30% had diabetes, 20% cataracts, 24% glaucoma, a very small number with AMD, and a very small number with diabetic retinopathy. Approximately 30% had a family history of glaucoma, again reflecting the inclusion criteria, and about 44% had had a dilated eye exam within the past year. This data represents the agreement. As I said, one of the critical aspects of this project is having the glaucoma specialist as a backup to the optometrist. So again, when there was instances of an abnormal OCT, all of that information was transmitted to UAB. The ophthalmologist independently evaluated it, and we can compare here what that comparison is. This is just based on 61 patients, as you can see here, not the whole 352. And the percent agreement, 75%, the kappa, 0.57, indicating moderate agreement. The numbers in red represent where they were consistent, and obviously the off axes or the off diagonal represent where there was disagreement. And again, this was before the adjudication took place. And you can see there's a balance in terms of if we want to call it over-diagnosis or under-diagnosis on both sides of that of that diagonal. This is for the right eye. The results are fairly similar for the left eye. The kappa a little bit lower, the percent agreement a little bit lower. Okay, so again, right off the bat, we see that there is an opportunity for the optometrist and the ophthalmologist to have a discussion about where these disagreements actually lie. And in speaking with one of the ophthalmologists at the Vision Center in Birmingham last Friday, in all of these cases, they were able to come to an agreement on what that actual diagnosis would be. I unfortunately don't have the data here to present the agreement on the management approaches, but it looks very similar. In the majority of cases, the management approaches between the two individuals were consistent. We collected, again, our interest in education, our interest in knowledge and attitudes. We collected a fair amount of information on perspectives on eye care. And here I'm just presenting some of that data. The numbers on the left-hand side represent the proportion of patients that agreed with a number of statements, one of which was it's important to have an eye doctor where they shop. This is one of the questions that Walmart was particularly interested in, the importance of access to this type of care for their customers. And about 60% of individuals indicated that they agreed with that statement. We also asked whether it's important to go to the eye doctor at least once every 2 years. And again, the majority of individuals said that they agreed with that particular statement. And then finally, no need to go to the eye doctor if not having problems with their eyes. About 20% of individuals agreed with that statement. We were also interested in cost, whether access to care or the cost of care was a problem. And across the board, between 60 and 70% indicated that cost was not a problem with respect to receiving an eye exam, eyeglasses, or prescription eye drops. We are conducting follow-ups with all these individuals, and so if we look at these three questions approximately 3 months later, we see that with respect to the questions on the left here, they all moved in the correct direction. Everyone agreed more with the things that they should agree more, that it's important to go to the doctor every 2 years, and that fewer people reported that they don't need to go to their eye doctor if they're not having problems. So these are all, again, preliminary indicators that those messages that we're providing as part of that education are moving in the right direction. We also asked, again, glaucoma-specific knowledge and awareness questions. And what we're presenting here is the proportion of people who responded incorrectly, false or not sure. You can have glaucoma and not know it. Glaucoma can be controlled, whether you have an eye exam through dilated pupils. And again, the correct answer is vision loss can be restored. Only measure eye pressure in a glaucoma exam. And what we're interested in, again, is if people are moving in the right direction following their visit when we ask them again 3 months later about these same questions. And sure enough, with one exception, we've seen improvement on all these metrics, movement in the correct direction. Fewer people are answering in the incorrect manner. One of the other things that we're obviously interested in is people's satisfaction with their comprehensive eye exam. And as you can see here across the board, whether they're satisfied with the eye exam, whether the location is convenient, and whether they would recommend this clinic to a friend or family member, we're at almost 100% on all of those metrics. So again, getting to the point for, is this the right setting to provide this type of care? Are they happy with the feedback that they're getting, et cetera? All indications are is that it's very, very positive. So as I said, we're really at the point of looking at this study in an interim sort of way. This is particularly advantageous because in a few weeks we'll be meeting at the CDC about these particular projects that we're hearing about today. And so it's a good opportunity for us to pause, take a look and see where our results are going. And so where are we in terms of, you know, the overall assessment of the project? As I mentioned, the agreement between the optometrist and ophthalmologist is moderate. And fortunately, in all of those cases, that lack of agreement has been adjudicated with very minor, you know, discussions between the two. And really, what the feedback that we've received from the optometrists is that they really like having this deeper bench, if you will. They like having those additional resources that they can reach out to help improve their own practices. We are, as I said, looking at the differences, the agreements in management practices between the two groups. All indications are, while they're not 100%, the percent agreement is not zero either. And in all of those cases, again, the feedback from the optometrist is they like having that backstop. They like having those additional resources in managing these particularly difficult patients, some of which are particularly difficult. One of the things that we are pursuing, as I said, right now the agreement is just between a single optometrist and a single ophthalmologist, is to expand that to a larger group of evaluators to see how stable, even among the ophthalmologists, that diagnosis is based on that clinic exam information. Because again, if we're going to use this as an approach going forward, in our case, a larger number of Walmarts, we really want to have a robust measure of what that criteria for diagnosis is. And again, looking at where the disagreements are, knowing that people are in agreement is important. Where the real value is the disagreement, to see why those off-diagonal patients were differently diagnosed, to help, again, refine the process on both sides of the provider. And then finally, again, as I mentioned, Chris Gerken is particularly interested in using these BMO scans in a normal group of individuals to help improve this in terms of identifying new tools that can be used to diagnose patients. So I will wrap up there and take any questions if there are any.
Okay, thank you, Terry. Any questions? Lisa?
The 32% that already have glaucoma,
I'm just going to jump back. So again, we recruited both new patients and existing patients. And because of the inclusion criteria, not really. I mean, we were essentially going after the optometrist patients who either were at risk of glaucoma or already had it. So the fact that a third of them already do, I mean, that's not a good prevalence, population-based prevalence. It's a good prevalence based on these inclusion criteria. So no, it wasn't a shock given that. Yes, so there's more literature on the agreement between ophthalmologists than there is between optometrists and ophthalmologists.
So what's that cap that you
want to... It's higher than this. The numbers that I, of course, there are ranges. The numbers that I've seen are as low as 50% and as high as 75-80%. And in looking at the studies and talking with Chris, it's partly a function of how severe the disease is and the specific patient population. A lot of it now has become potentially old literature because the prior studies were based on different techniques than are being used today. And so, again, if we look at a study that was done 10 years ago on the agreement between ophthalmologists, it's based on technology that may not be in play today.
And so,
Interestingly, Paul Lee's not here. I believe he's going to be here tomorrow. He and I have looked at the years of experience on this, and believe it or not, that doesn't really help all that much. Now, again, it varies by study. Now, on the optometrist comparison, smaller number of studies, but the agreement is about in this neighborhood. And so, again, that's why I say the value is not so much in the diagonal, it's in these off diagonals. And what drove the ophthalmologist to say glaucoma in this particular case, but the optometrist to go with suspect. And that's, again, one of the process measures that we're also collecting information on in this project, because when those adjudications take place, it's a formal process so that we can learn, both of them can learn, but we can also learn as to the decision-making process, what specific aspects of the exam they looked at in coming to that determination.
Any other question? I do have one. Is it the characteristic of the population? I mean, I was a little bit shocked also with the proportion of people that they say cost is not a problem, or they knew, like 20% say that even if they don't have symptoms, and I think that if you go to the literature and even some of the works that we've done from different surveys,
it's much more.
So is that like the population that's coming to Walmart has different characteristics than, you know, the national sample?
So there were a lot of things that surprised me about this population. One of which was their level of knowledge, and that partly goes to the optometrists that are involved in the project, particularly Frank LaRusso, who's the ophthalmologist in Birmingham, who's a good friend of mine. He works very, very hard to educate his patients. In fact, when I was talking with him about this, his wife was standing there as well, and she chimed in that, you know, Frank spends a lot of time badgering his patients to make sure they come back, to remember to take their medications. So I think partly what we're seeing
is biased information.
Absolutely. But the cost of not being a problem, I was particularly struck by.
Yeah, so that's what I'm asking. Is this population like Medicaid population, or are they covered by any means, or something? Or do you have any idea about their, you know, healthcare coverage or their?
Off the top of my head, I don't quite recall. But it's a different population than we originally expected that we were going to capture. So
and maybe when you collect the whole, I mean, the sample size is
right.
Small. So.
Right.
One quick question. Yeah. Back on the different diagnoses, I wonder, I don't know how you would really track this, but I wonder if there's any difference between the two based upon one purely reading an image and the other actually seeing the patient and having other factors to weigh.
So the protocol is that whatever the optometrist is looking at, we're looking at. In fact, we have a direct feed to their medical record system.
Okay, so it's not just the photo.
No, it's not just the photo. It's the complete exam. Sorry if I gave that impression. Everything that happened during that comprehensive eye exam, including the photos, gets pushed to UAB. And so we see not only the information from that particular visit, all of it, but if the patient is an established patient in one of these vision centers, we actually have access to all of the prior exams as well. It's not a lack of information sharing between the two. We have the same thing that they have. The only thing is that they saw the patient real time and actually may have an established history with them, whereas our ophthalmologist is just seeing all the information for the first time and not in person. So to the extent that could make a difference, we could debate that. But in terms of what they have access to, it's exactly the same.